I'm sure you're all curious. But I don't know if we have got any visitors. If we do, I'm not the normal men's guy. I'm the lead pastor of the church, but I'm pinch hitting for Pastor Rod. He's on vacation slash working on his doctoral work right now. So he asked me to step in and do this. And so I'm glad to do it. This is kind of the bread and butter that I cut my teeth on back in Aliso at our sending church. I was the men's pastor there. And this particular topic this morning is one that I cared a lot about there and I care a lot about here. And as the senior pastor, the lead pastor of our church here, this is one of the most important elements that we can have as a strong and godly church is men that are answering the call for this particular qualification that we're going to look at. Now, I understand as we get into this morning, some of you might say, well, this doesn't apply to my stage of life. This doesn't apply to where I'm at. But I want you to think about it from a bigger perspective, from a 30,000 foot view. And I'll dive into a little bit why on that. But just know ahead of time that I realize that it might be tempting for some in the room to say, hey, I'm going to tap out on this because this isn't where I'm at, or I've already checked the box on this one. But stick with us and stay with it. A proving ground is something that exists to make sure that the person that you're looking at for a particular role is going to be able to do that role, to be able to do that job, right? I remember from the Band of Brothers series that they were training these paratroopers, and this was something that was brand new to the United States military. And so they had to kind of start from scratch and work their way up. And especially as they started to think beyond that about the fact that, man, we're going to be sending these guys behind enemy lines as they're thinking more about D-Day and the operation that was going to precede that. And they're going to be jumping out of planes with all kinds of anti-aircraft flak flying around and other things going on. It's going to be the dark of night for some of them. It's going to be disorienting. And on top of that, we're saying, hey, jump out of a perfectly good airplane at like 20,000 feet up in the air through all of this too. Before they could get there, they had to start on the grounds of Kurahi. They had to start on the grounds with the airplane, not 20,000 feet in the air saying jump. Instead, what they did, they started with a fuselage that was on the ground and they said, hey, you need to jump out of the door the 6 feet to the ground there. Because they knew something, right? They knew that if they couldn't get these men to jump out of the plane that was on the ground, there's no way that they were going to be ready to jump out of a plane that was 20,000 feet in the air. That was the proving grounds for them. Sometimes, though, the proving grounds can be just as important as the actual thing itself. And I think that's what we come to this morning. So in our text this morning, we're going to be in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 through 5. And here Paul writes this. He says, he must, speaking of the man that's qualified to be an elder. And remember, just to set the context, we're arguing in this series, and I think rightly so, that though these are qualifications for an elder, these are qualifications that every single godly man should be striving for. And so here Paul says this, he, the man that aspires to be an elder, or we would say just the godly man, must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? So let me deal with the end first, and then we'll back up here. Paul's argument is, in a way, from the lesser to the greater, though I don't mean lesser qualitatively. The home is important, and I think that's what we're seeing here from God's point of view. But Paul's saying, if you're looking at a man to lead the church who doesn't know how to lead his own home well, then you're looking at the wrong man for the job. Because how is he going to be able to care for the needs of the church if he can't care for the needs of his family? In fact, I would argue he shouldn't be qualified, and that's what Paul's saying, to be concerned with the needs of the church if he's not concerned for the needs of his family. And so Paul's going to get into this, but he's going to give a description. He's going to unpack what it looks like to manage his own household well. First, let's talk about the word manage. It's a word that means to rule, direct, guide, or lead. So to rule, direct, guide, or lead. It's the same word used in 1 Timothy 5:17, speaking of the elder ruling over the church. And so again, the parallel there between the man of God's role with his family or with his household and the elder's role with the church there. It's used in 1 Thess 5:12. It says that we are to be subject to those who are over us. That's the word manage there, over us in the Lord. It conveys a positional authority. And so Paul is saying of the man that he has a positional authority in the home, that he is to rule over his household. The household involves the family, those in the home. During the time of Paul's writing, this would have extended probably also to any household slaves that they had. Anybody living under your roof, you have the obligation, the call, the responsibility to manage, to rule, to guide, to lead, to direct those that God has given you in your stead. Notice, though, they're to do this with all dignity. It's a word that conveys a reverence and a gravity to the task, that this is not something that's flippant. This is not something that just comes easy. Those of you who have raised kids or just in our marriages, you know that it's not something that you just flip a switch and it's like, hey, this is easy. I know how to do everything. I know how to be a good husband. I know how to be patient. I know how to lead my kids well. I know how to raise my kids. We should feel the weightiness of this task. And Paul wants us to feel that as he's writing this. And that's we're to manage them with all dignity. And then he says, explaining a little bit more about the kids specifically, he says, keeping his children submissive. This and then the parallel account in Titus has led to some questions about what Paul means here. Because the parallel account in Titus says that the children should be believing, or other translations say faithful. I prefer the translation faithful, and I think it keeps with what Paul's saying here in 1 Timothy chapter 3, because to argue that the elder has a responsibility to make sure that his kids are saved is to place upon the elder something that is beyond the elder's capability. Yes? We all admit that readily. In fact, any of you that have kids or any of you that care about the young people in our church, we all know that we can't save them. If we could save them, we would save them. If we could save them, there would never be an unsaved child in any church. But there are plenty of men who have been faithful to the task, who have had children, who have grown up and not decided to follow the Lord. Instead, the qualification is that you need to make sure that your home is a place of order, that your children are submissive, that they're faithful to you, they're faithful to your leadership, to your authority, that maybe they haven't bowed the knee to Christ and perhaps they never will, but they're not in open rebellion against your leadership. They're not running amok, debauched. They're not saying, hey, we don't want anything to do with you and I'm going to go live this immoral lifestyle and I don't care about what you say. There have been situations where men in the pastorate have had children that have gone wayward that way, who have had to step down from the pastorate for a period of time in order to get their house in order. I don't think this is a permanently disqualifying element here, but this is something, because of the good and the importance of this role, that Paul says, hey, this is important enough that if your children are not in line, if your children are openly rebelling against you, then it's good for you to step aside from your role as a pastor, as an elder, and attend to that before you return to the role. So that's the charge. That's the task. That's the qualification, to manage your household well. And a man can preach the best sermons and work hard for the church and pastor a church with multiple services and see many baptisms and counsel people and share the gospel every time he can. But if he neglects his family at the same time, Paul is saying he's unfit for ministry. And likewise, as we bring it down to the popular level with us, you can serve in the church. You can be a community group leader. You can volunteer your time for VBS. You can be somebody that's out preaching on the weekends. You can be a greeter. You can be an usher. You can read systematic theologies for fun. But if you're not managing your household well, then you've neglected the first priority that God has given to you. Your home is your priority. And again, if you're sitting there going, okay, but I don't know that applies to my stage of life, I want to encourage you this morning. I think it still does. Maybe if you're single in the room, you still have a household. God still cares how you manage your household. The one that you're managing primarily in that regard is yourself. And some of the other things that we've already talked about in this series apply to how you're managing yourself. We've talked about self-control. We've talked about some of these other things that Paul talks about as well. If your household is out of order personally and it's just you at home, or if you don't have kids, or you're a single person in the room, young person in the room, you still have a responsibility to do what Paul's calling us to do. But why? Why is this so important? Why does God care so much about this? There's three things I'd like to suggest to us this morning that help us understand why this is so important. And we could go a lot of different areas. God created the family, designed the family, all of these things. The family is important. It's a microcosm of a lot of things that you see in the church. But here's the things that I want us to think about this morning. First is this. I want you to manage your household well because you were made for this. This is part of God's design, in other words, for you. As you sit here in this room as men, God has created you to be the manager, the ruler, the guy, the sole voice of guidance and leadership and direction over your home, or the ultimate voice, I should say, maybe not the sole voice. This goes back to Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 through 28. There we read this from Moses. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. The praying mantises and the hawks included in that. you may say, but he's saying this to both Adam and Eve. You know, it's fair, except that when we go to Paul's instructions about who may be the ones leading and speaking and preaching in the church, he actually appeals back to this in creation order and saying that Adam was created first. Thereby, Adam has the role of authority or headship or leadership in this relationship. So part of your role in managing your household is fulfilling the creation mandate that God has given you. It's part of exercising your dominion, is to lead your wife well, to lead your family well, to lead your home well. He made you to bear the burdens, men. He made you to be bold and to be courageous when situations are difficult at home. He made you to be physically stronger. Now, some of you have strong wives, I get that, but generally speaking, he made you to be the stronger one. He made you to sacrifice your wants and your desires for the good of your family. He made you to be the protector. He made you to be the leader. And I get it. This is not a popular concept in today's world and in today's culture. It's considered toxic masculinity that a man should be the leader of his home. But guess what, men? Toxic masculinity is part of God's plan. He desires us to be toxic men when it comes to the world's standards. We have a choice here, right? The world says this is not the type of man that you should be. You should be soft and effeminate, and you should abdicate your position, and you should let the woman be the leader and not be so insecure. Well, you can either run afoul of God's design or the world's design. It's your choice. And I know which one I'd rather run afoul of in this scenario. If you've been watching the tragic story of what's been unfolding down in the Hill Country, who have you seen searching through the rubble for the bodies of their children? You've seen the men, right? And I don't know these men. I don't know where they're at with the Lord. But even there's something that is even just in creation. There's an instinct there that causes a father to say, I'm going. Or if you think back to the shootings in Uvalde, remember? There was a man who was getting his hair cut. I believe he was, I can't remember what branch of the police he was involved in. But he heard about it and he came across and he grabbed his rifle. He got up from his seat and he immediately drove to the scene. It was like, we need to get in there. There's an instinct about us to do what Paul is talking about here, to protect, to lead, to be on the front line. What we're talking about here is headship in the home, leadership. This is what God has created you for. So you're making, men, the final decisions. Now, if you're sitting there at home and you're like my family and you're looking at your wife going, where should we go to dinner? I'm not talking about that. That's not abdicating your role. That's just being a good man to be like, you decide. I don't know. Because everything I throw out, you're like, eh. You know, you've been there, right? No, but when it's big decisions, you're the one making the final decision, right? Even when it comes to a realm that you might say, okay, hey, my wife is handling the schooling responsibilities at home. You own the onus at the end of the day for saying, are we going to send our kids to private school, public school? Are we going to homeschool them? What are we going to do with them? That's a decision that is yours to make because God has created you to make decisions. Financial decisions. Should we sell our house? Should we sell our car? Should we refinance? Should we do this? That's going to be ultimately your decision to make. That's something that God has created you to bear the burden of. You're making the final decisions. You're also directing the finances. I want to be careful here. I'm not going to argue that there's a biblical principle that says you have to be the primary breadwinner. That may be the norm, but that may not be the case in every single relationship. But I think at the end of the day, men, you bear the responsibility to be the one that takes the financial lead. You need to be the one directing the finances. Your wife may balance the budget better than you do, but you need to be aware of what's going on. And she needs to come to you in making decisions at the end of the day on your finances. You're the chief disciplinarian. Some of you have wives that are disciplining your kids and you have abdicated that role. Man, that needs to be your role. You need to be the one that is ultimately the one that is disciplining your children. They need to possess an appropriate fear of dad getting involved. You're the spiritual teacher and leader of your home. These are, again, parts of God's design for you. This goes back to the creation mandate. This is what God has created you to do. And so here's the frightening thing, man. If you don't do this, someone else will. If you don't lead your home well, someone else is more than willing to fill that void. I remember growing up watching the cartoon, The Flintstones. Anybody else in the room watch the Flintstones growing up?
Yeah.
Fred and Barney are not good role models. Don't be like them. Or a little bit more modern, Homer Simpson. Don't be Homer. Homer goes to his job and he works in the nuclear power plant all day long and he comes home and he's not the leader of his home. He abdicates that role. Managing your home well, according to God's design, man, it essentially means that you've got an entirely new job that you have when you come home and pull back into your driveway. some of you need to take 5 minutes and just pray before you walk in that door and prepare yourself and realize, okay, I'm clocking into a different job now. I've got a different role in front of me right now when I walk in this door. And you need to be ready for that because God has designed you for this. I hope there's something that resonates in us that feels that this is true and right. Even if you're looking at your life right now and realizing, man, I've got work to do. God has designed you for this role. God has made you to be the leader of your home. But not only were you made for this role, the second reason why this is such an important qualification is this: your family will be better for this. Your family's going to be better if you lead and manage your home the way God has designed you to lead and manage your home. Undeniably. If we were to poll the wives of our church, how many of them would say that they don't want their husbands to manage their household like this? My guess is if they're believers, there's not a single woman that would say, I don't want my husband to lead the way that God has designed him to lead. Because they see that this is good and they see that this is right. Let's start with our kids, okay? Let's start with our children and how our children benefit from this. This is from the National Fatherhood Initiative. I don't think this is a believing resource, but it says this. It says, father presence and positive involvement improve children's emotional and social well-being. When children grow up with a father or a father figure in the home, they are less likely to live in poverty, drop out of high school, commit crimes, and be sentenced to prison, become pregnant before the age of 18, and more. So here you have a worldly resource that's saying fathers matter in the home, right? How much more should we believe and own and realize that fathers matter in the home from a biblical perspective? When we're now all of a sudden bringing eternal matters to play, when we're now all of a sudden bringing spiritual teaching and guidance to play. The verse I want us to think about this morning in this regard is Ephesians 6:4. Ephesians 6:4, what does it say? It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Kent Hughes has a book, Disciplines of a Godly Man. Some of us went through that last year together. But he provides some helpful guidance on this verse and some observations here that I think are good in this. But before we get there, again, Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. There's three areas in this verse that come out that your kids need from you, men. Okay? Three areas. The first is this: they need tenderness from you. When Paul says bring them up, it's the same word that is translated in other places as nourish them. So to bring them up is not this cold, static, you know, stoic, separate, distant. I'm just going to bring them up in this, you know, vacuum environment where they're going to learn things from. No, it's a tenderness that they need from you. They need you to bring them up in a relational capacity. They need you to nourish them, to feed them as you raise them. The second thing they need from you is discipline. I mentioned that in point number one, but you need to be the chief disciplinarian. But here's the thing, man. Discipline isn't less than the rod, but it is certainly more than the rod. So when you think about disciplining your children and the discipline that's needed here, it's not less than the corporal punishment. It is that. But it's more than that too, right? Your kids not only need you to discipline them physically, but then they also need you to correct them. They need you to comfort them. And so they need your tenderness. They need your discipline. And then finally, they need your instruction. They need you to teach them. The instruction of the Lord specifically. This is where Hughes comes in. And Hughes says this. He provides a breakdown for us of instruction. First, he says instruction is verbally instructing our kids. Your kids need to know your voice in a didactic function, meaning in a teaching function. They need to hear from you. Teach them things about God. Teach them things about what it looks like to grow up. If it's young men at home, they need you to teach them about manhood. If it's your daughters, they need you to teach them about what they should be looking for in a man as they grow up. They need you to teach them verbally. Second, it means they need you to lead them spiritually, leading family devotions and prayer. This is part of what it looks like to instruct your children in the Lord, leading family devotions and prayer. Third, they need you to monitor their input sources and content. This is huge. Let me just encourage you and implore you, men, you cannot abdicate your role in this regard. You have got to know the things that are coming into your children's lives. I'll just be open. My son's in the room, and so he is right here to attest to this. We have a strict policy that devices do not go upstairs or in bedrooms. Some of y'all are letting your kids take their phones into their rooms, and you have no clue the world of immorality that you've just granted them behind a closed door. You need to put strict regulations in place. You're saying, can I do that? Yes, that's the job God's giving you to do. That's the job he's giving you to do. I don't care if your kids don't like you. It's not about your kids being happy. It's about them being holy. It's about them being safe. It's about them being protected. And the world that we live in is quite frankly just screwed up beyond belief. And so you wouldn't give them a loaded gun to go play with in the room. But if you give them the phone with unrestricted access and you send them back into their rooms, don't be surprised when things go south. Guard the things that they are taking in, man. That includes television as well, video games, all these things. Next, it involves making sure the church isn't just going through the motions for your family. Make sure the church matters to your family. Be involved. They need to see that you love the church, right? Here's the thing, y'all. If you want your kids to love the church when they leave your home, are you showing them that you love the church while they're in your home? Because if you're not, they won't. When we were back in California, I was serving as the college pastor, and I watched countless numbers of high school students graduate from high school and walk away from the church. And sometimes their parents would come to me and say, hey, you know, what can you help in this? And so many times it was the same story. The parents had said that church is not a priority for them when their kids were growing up, when they were raising their kids. And then when their kids left home and made those same decisions, that church isn't a priority for me, then they realized the fruit that they were reaping based on the seeds that they had sown while their kids were at home. Make church a priority. Love the church. Be involved in the church. Don't just go through the motions. Don't just show up and check the box. If your kids fall into the mindset that going to church is just, well, we have to go to church because it's Sunday, that's not leading your family the way that God has called you to. And then also living a life of instruction by example. This is the if I can put it this way, the passive side of instructing them in the Lord. As they watch you, even at times without you realizing that they're watching you, you need to be living a life that causes them to go, I want to be like Dad. I want to live that way. That's the convicting one. Deuteronomy 6:6-7. Moses says, the words of the Lord, as the Lord is speaking to him, he records these. He says, in these words, God says that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. Man, that's our job. That's our role, is to take the lead on that. Again, Hughes in Disciplines of a Godly Man says this, men, as fathers, you have such power. You will have this terrible power till you die, like it or not, in your attitude towards authority, in your attitude toward women, in your regard for God and the church. What terrifying responsibilities. This is truly the power of life and death. This is what it means when I say that your family is going to be better when you step into these roles and you say, I want to lead in a good way, in a godly way in this. I want to encourage you, though, if you're out there and you're going, man, I feel the conviction on this. I feel the burden on this. I need to get better in this. Let me give you a simple maxim to get started, and it comes from the great theologian Mel Gibson in The Patriot. Aim small, what? Miss small. Aim small, miss small. Here's what I mean by that. Some of y'all might be paralyzed by guilt or shame, or maybe you're just overwhelmingly convicted by this, and you may be tempted to go home and make sweeping declarations of the dawning of a new era, and you're gonna have hour-long family devotions, everybody's getting up early, and you're gonna memorize the book of Job together, because why not? And you're gonna just be a totally radically different individual. But what you may find is that motivation is gonna peter out within a week or two. Instead, aim small, miss small. Start somewhere small. Read a chapter of Proverbs at dinner every night together. Make it a point to pray with each of your kids before they go to bed. Tell your wife that you're going to take over the administration of discipline in the home. Choose one verse to memorize at the dinner table each week together. Start small. Start somewhere. Maybe not all of those, maybe one of those, maybe a couple of those. This way, if you miss, for example, one night of reading that chapter of Proverbs at the dinner table, you know what? It's okay, men, because you can pick it up again the next night. You haven't made the sweeping declaration of going, you know what, we're going to do this and everything's going to change forever and we're going to have all of these big goals. And then as soon as you start to miss one, then it's like, well, we might as well just give up on this because of the discouragement. Aim small, miss small. That's with our kids. How about our wives, though? Are our wives better when we manage our own household well? And I think undeniably, yes. Ephesians 5, 25 through 28. Ephesians 5, 25 through 28. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. 1 Peter 3:7, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. Men, when you manage your home well by loving your wife well, your wife is protected. Your wife is sanctified. That's a big one. She is made more like Jesus when you love her well. She's honored. She's nourished. So our wives benefit as well as we manage our own households well. I mean, if you're not leading your family well, your passivity is doing active harm to them. That's the inverse of this point. If you're not managing your home well, your passivity is doing harm to your wife. And if you have kids, your kids as well. But perhaps the greater motivation is that your passivity is actually disobedience to God's word and puts you at risk of reaping those consequences as well. Or to put it positively, if you obey the Lord in these things, you're also going to reap the reward that comes with it. And that's our final motivation this morning. It's this: your walk will thrive because of this. If you manage your household well in obedience to God, your walk will benefit. I referenced 1 Peter 3:7. Let me go back there and read the rest of the verse. I'll just read the whole thing. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life. Notice this that Peter says here: so that your prayers may not be hindered. Peter says, if we are disobedient in how we are loving our wives, which is part of managing our household well, that's going to infect the, what words am I looking for here? Affect the effectiveness. That's why I got confused. Do you see why this is so confused? I was using both of them what am I doing? Affect the effectiveness of our prayers. That's insane to think about, isn't it, though? Your short temper with your wife in the morning may impact how effective your prayer is before your board meeting that you're about to step into later on during the day. This is a principle that applies not just to our wives, but just in the general principle of obedience to the Lord. Later on, 1 Peter 3:12, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. So the ears of the Lord are open to the prayer of the righteous. But those that are doing evil, his face is against them. 1 Peter 4:7, the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Or James 5:16. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a what type of person has great power in its working? The prayer of a righteous person has great power in its working. So there's a biblical principle, men, that our obedience to God has a direct bearing on the effectiveness of our prayer life. And so that's why this third point is what it is. That if you are not managing your household well, if you are neglecting this area of responsibility that God has designed you for, that God has created you for so that your family will be better off in the end, you cannot expect that you will have a close walk with the Lord and an effective prayer life at the same time. The intimacy with the Lord is in direct proportion to your obedience to the Lord. Not your salvific state, okay? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that your obedience has to do with whether or not you're saved. I'm saying your obedience has everything to do with whether or not you have an intimate relationship with God. It has everything to do with whether or not you feel close to Him or distant from Him. It has everything to do with whether or not your prayers are effectively heard by Him or, as hard as this sounds, ignored by Him. Your obedience to the Lord in this regard and how you manage your home matters to God. It may be, man, that some of us in the room aren't seeing God's answer to prayers concerning our job or income or neighbors or coworkers because you're not managing your home well in obedience to the Lord. He cares about this. The inverse is if we lean into this, if we start to say, man, how can I grow in this? Not only going to benefit your family, it's going to benefit your walk with Christ. Your relationship with God is dynamic, not static, right? The Christian walk is not a people mover. You're not just on this one plane the whole way. Your relationship with the Lord has its ups and downs. And the downs are so often created because we are walking in disobedience to Him in some area. And the ups are so often because we've repented and we are leaning into obedience with Him in those areas that we need to. Your obedience to the Lord has a direct bearing on your intimacy with Him. So as you manage your home well, your walk will thrive as a result of this. The proving ground of the pastor is the home because God has made him to lead in the home. His family will be better when he leads in the home. And his walk with Christ will be stronger when he leads in the home. And that's not just true of the pastor, that's true of you too. Let me urge you to make your home a priority. Manage your household well, and then you can give attention to the other responsibilities that God has given you and placed in your life. Can I provide one caveat on this that I'll often hear in ministry? And I used to get uncomfortable with this. I don't apologize for it anymore. Maybe it's just because I'm older now and I just am caring less. Managing your home well is not saying we're too involved in the church. We need to pull back from church. Okay. You'd be surprised at how many times I've heard that from people. And they pit the church against family. As soon as you pit the church against family, you have done insane damage to your family and to your kids. I'm not saying there's not a danger of overcommitting to things, right? And there are times that people have come to me and been like, dude, I'm leading in 6 different areas. I've got 7 small groups. I can't do anymore. 100%. And we're there to say, hey, let's get some of that off your plate. But there is no such thing as taking a break from the bride of Christ. Okay? And I'm saying that yet you're like, well, that you're a pastor. That's why you care. No, I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. That's why I care. The bride of Christ is the most important thing that you can love as a dad and as a husband, is to lead your family to love the church. To lead your family into the church, to lead your family to say, hey, the church matters to us. And so that's my caveat as I say, manage your own household well and then give attention to the other responsibilities. I'm not saying, okay, pull back and retreat home and isolate yourself from the church, because that's not managing our family well. No, this is making sure that we're not neglecting our responsibilities at home to be a better boss or employee or worship leader or small group leader or hospitality volunteer or evangelist, greeter, trailer driver, whatever it is that you are. You're going to be better at all of those things if you manage your home well. It's about taking care of the proving grounds that you're fit and ready to be used by the Lord in whatever other role that He has designed for you. Let's pray as we wrap up and then we'll break for small groups.